Are you confused about real food and what's healthy and good for the planet? Do you need the facts about local, organic, and sustainable food? Well, get ready to change the way you eat. Get ready for The Appropriate Omnivore with Aaron Zober.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Appropriate Omnivore. I'm your host, Aaron Zober. As I've mentioned, both on the podcast and on my blog, I'm a big advocate of sourdough bread. While still a largely untapped market, it's rising. And what's great about many of the organic sourdoughs around now is they're made by local artisans. We can buy directly from the bakers at their bakeries or at farmers markets, where we can get to know our baker. Here to talk with me about organic local sourdough is Lisa McCulloch-Rourke, founder and CEO of the Topanga Grain Company. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Hi, Aaron. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It's great to have you on, and I'm glad you can fit this in because I imagine with the whole sourdough making process, it's a pretty busy schedule.
It is. I think most people would be shocked at the amount of hours that it takes to actually do it, but it's really rewarding, and it has its pros and cons for sure. And it's something that when you get into it, you're like, wow, this is a lot of work, which is why, you know, it's nice to be able to have your local baker or your local bakery that you can go to, because for most of us, it's really difficult to fit that in every single week to, you know, provide the bread that you need for your family.
It is very rewarding, especially, as I said at the beginning, that it's still a growing market and there's a need for them. I know Sally Fallon, who's a big advocate of sourdough, and that was what got me introduced to having sourdough. She says even she has a hard time finding organic sourdough, and that's why as a blogger and a podcaster, I've done a lot of research to learn who the local organic sourdough makers are, specifically in my area of Los Angeles, and you were one of the ones that I had come across.
Well, that's so important to me, and we can get into that a little bit if you want. That's kind of interesting how, for me, like if I have a choice, I'm always going to go organic if I have that option, because especially if you're going to make something for other people, why wouldn't you just go with the best? Just go straight to the top. Why bother with anything else? And that was part of my struggle too, is that I am a foodie first. I love food. I love good food. I also want healthy, clean food, healthy, clean, simple food. And it's very difficult to find. And as I started playing around with it and making my own bread, that, you know, you kind of start just making bread and making yeast bread, then you kind of graduate to sourdough bread. For a lot of people, it kind of works like that. And you know, there's really no going back. It's kind of interesting that, you know, I got into this not knowing how we would all need it, that we would need to know this skill, how important it would be. So it's really interesting how that kind of happened and the timing of it.
How did you first get involved with making sourdough bread?
Well, again, you know, just a major foodie. I've always loved bread. I think bread has always been my comfort food of choice. And also just I have a history in my family of just having, my mom was a great baker, great cook. And I just assumed every family was like that, making a lot of things homemade. And my dad's side of the family is similar to the Amish, it's kind of a branch off of that, made everything homemade. And I had cousins that were milling and things like that. And it just something just, I don't know, I think couple of things happened. Oh, also I had worked for a health practitioner for years and years and learned a lot about food and how toxic white flour is. And for me, being a foodie and loving food and then hearing how most of it is terrible and you have to be careful what you eat and all of that, it just, everything kind of came together that when I finally broke down and bought my first mill and, you know, really just had this dream of making, because I'm also from the South. And in the South, you know, there's a lot of kind of comfort food making and that. And I was like, you know, how can I make good Southern comfort food and have it be healthy or at least a little bit healthier? What's possible? And my first endeavors were terrible. they weren't good, but that's how you get started. You get in there. It took me a long time. So the first thing I worked on was my sourdough biscuits. And it took a while to get them right. You know, they were like hockey pucks in the beginning, but I'm a researcher. I'm, you know, hardcore. I read, you know, I probably watched thousands of videos and read books and bought books and you name it, just reading about it, just immersing myself in it. And the other thing is you just have to do it. You have to do it over and over and over and then realizing, oh, okay, that's what I did wrong. Let me try that again. And as I finally started getting good at it, I would take it with me to work. I would give it away to neighbors. And when I finally thought, you know, I would love to find out, let's see, because if I maybe tried to sell this at a farmer's market and I realized, you know, anybody can make a good loaf or two, but could I scale up and make hundreds of loaves? Would I be able to do that? And out of my home. And I had to research, like, how do you do that? What's allowed? And so I realized, no, that would be difficult. How would I even know how to do that? So I went to school. I took a lot of the PTO that I'd accumulated at my job, and I went to a professional baking school in South San Francisco called San Francisco Baking Institute. And it happens to be one of the top baking schools in the country. People come from all over the world. I was super intimidated, and I was in class with people that taught culinary and taught baking in colleges. And I was able to completely hang in there with the education part of it because a very obsessive researcher type of person. So I probably knew more than most of the people in my class, but then the actual physical practice of it, oh my gosh, I was devastated because I was in there with people that had been rolling dough their entire lives. And I, you know, that was really interesting. It's, you know, kind of like basketball or ballet or anything. It takes practice and then it turns into muscle memory. And so I was just devastated at, like, at the speed and the beauty of being able to just whip out a baguette with your hands from nothing and just in seconds. And it, you know, I think I cried the first 2 days, but by the end, because I'm also one of those people that it's like, I have to be the best. I can't just go halfway. I have to pursue excellence. And so by the end of it, I was like, okay, I'm supposed to do this. I'm supposed to do this. And I'm not young. Like, this is, it's very interesting. I feel like I found my purpose at the, you know, 20 years after I should have, maybe. But, you know, at least I have all these years of accumulated knowledge and wisdom that I got from all the different things I've done in my life that maybe brought me to this point. But yeah, and so then it was like therapy for me, just getting in and having my hands in dough at a time in my life that was extremely stressful. And I know some people turn to gardening or running or pottery. It was like that for me. And I think I wasn't sleeping. I just was in a really, really stressful job situation and had some struggles with one of my teenage kids. And it helped me survive that and get through that and be able to think about something. It gave my brain something to think about instead of worry and stress. Yeah, so it was really healing, very, very healing, and such a sense of accomplishment to be able to take and give this amazing bread to somebody and be able to say, and it's whole grain and it's fermented. And so if people are like, oh, I can't really eat gluten, but guess what? Here's this information about sourdough and how it converts and changes gluten so that most people can eat it. Things like that just really bring me joy. And because, again, I can't do something and do it halfway. I need to pursue excellence in whatever it is I do. And so it's really, you know, I really want to be, it's not about having to be the best, because there's no such thing. There's always going to be somebody coming up and doing something new and innovative, which is just amazing. And there's something great about this bread baking culture where people really help each other out. And, you know, sometimes you feel really unworthy, like, oh my gosh, this person's been doing it since they were 18 and I got started later. You can't really worry about that. Each person has their own personal stamp. Bakers have their own flavor, their own flair, their own way of doing something, their own percentages of whole grain or not. So, you know, and there's somebody that's going to love what you're doing. So you can't really bog yourself down too much with that.
The reasons that you said you like sourdough, those are the same reasons for me. And I see it as something which, not only is the market on tap, but also the discussion of how beneficial it is. We still don't hear a lot about that. We have moved away definitely from the no-carb thing. We've seen that there are certainly complex carbs, a lot of vegetables that are beneficial. And then more recently, we've even moved away from the phobia of grains, because we've seen people talk about the benefits of brown rice, even white rice. And I'm wondering when it's going to explode where we then see sourdough in the same way, because to me, I see that on the level of those, that it's not white flour.
Right, exactly right. And so I think what happened is kind of like when my husband was diagnosed with pre-diabetes, his doctor was really straight with him and just said, you know, you're going to be on medication, you know, you've got to get on top of this. And just so you know, since he's been eating our bread, he's no longer pre-diabetic. He was able to completely reverse that because, and we have a lot of type 1 diabetics that are able to eat our bread because of the high fiber and protein. It doesn't spike your blood sugar. But anyway, back to what you were saying is that I am really into the nutrition and the gut health of sourdough bread and what it means. And I really can't wait to get into having our bread tested at a lab and getting that information back because I want to know, I want to be able to talk about with authority exactly what it does or doesn't do, exactly how the sugars break down and all of that. And I follow a lady in London who basically is getting her doctorate in the gut health and digestion of sourdough and what it means and how it changes things. And it's just fascinating to me because, and I'll kind of step back for a minute, when I worked for this holistic doctor who had been, his name was Dr. Bob Marshall, and he had nutrient research down in Torrance and a show that still happens on Saturdays, a show called Healthline, like for 20, 30 years now. And he had an office in Santa Monica for a while. And he moved his manufacturing because he makes health supplements to Austin, Texas, which is where I went to work for him. And he was really great about having all the employees come in once a week for these long health and talking so that they would know what they were selling and they would break down what each supplement does and why it does it. And I just learned so much. And at the same time, my dad was diagnosed with cancer, a really serious brain cancer, and he was only given a short time to live. And it was just interesting how he was diagnosed with that right as I got this job. And I just, you know, learned so much. But tying that all together with how the doctor told my husband to stay away from all these laundry lists of things, I think that's what people did with bread. They just, rather than saying, look, if you can find organic whole grain sourdough bread, that's going to be okay, they just said all carbs are bad. Carbs are bad. They break down as sugar. Don't eat them. And that's really wrong because you need them for your gut. They now know that the prebiotic, predigested grains help feed the probiotic good bacteria in your gut. And if you try to go with like a gluten-free diet, you have to add gums and weird things to these non-gluten breads, and they're typically not organic because it's almost impossible to make an organic gluten-free bread because you have to use all this toxic, weird stuff to put it together because it's not natural bread. We're making, you know, you're reaching, it's like now, you know, if people just kind of step back and go, you know what, how were they making bread 200 years ago? How were they making bread 500 years ago? That's how we're doing it. We're doing it as close to the old way as we can.
Yes. That's my thoughts exactly, is that the idea of baker's yeast is a relatively new thing. I believe it's maybe a little over 100 years, but traditionally for long periods of time, sourdough has been around. And I think it kind of goes to the question of how far back really do we need to go as far as traditional diets? And also the fact that sourdough bread and the fermentation of grains goes back further than we think in time.
Right, it does. It really, really does. And it's really interesting to think about who discovered it the very first time. Well, it's so simple. If you mix together flour and water and leave it alone, it's going to become bubbly and active after several days. And this is something really interesting that most people may not know. The more you bake in a space, whether it be your kitchen or somewhere else, the more active enzymes are in the air, which is what inoculates your sourdough when you mix flour and water together. So you can have a really active space and then you can go into, like we're moving into a new commercial space that I'm nervous about, that no sourdough has been made there before. It's going to take a little bit before the air is as filled with those amazing beneficial enzymes as our kitchen is. Because right now, our kitchen is so active with those enzymes that you can mix flour and water together and you have a bubbly starter in 24 to 48 hours. So if you leave it, you've got a starter. It's really incredible. So some people, you know, when they struggle with starters, it's A, because they've never made it in their kitchen before, or they're using dead flour that they purchase at the grocery store. And you need living flour, something that's been fresh milled from a live seed, because they really have to kill it to make it shelf stable, which is why milling is so, so important. And I'm so excited to be teaching classes and teaching people about milling and the parts of the grain and why that's so important and why everybody can mill at home if they want to, or they'll be able to buy the fresh milled flour from us directly and things like that.
You had talked about how sourdough had helped with your husband. And have you seen other people benefit from it, say, certain customers?
Oh, yeah. And there are definitely weeks when we are so exhausted that we're like, why did we do this? Why are we so tired? I don't know if this is sustainable. Can we keep going? But I'll tell you what keeps us going is the stories from people as they come up. And I've had people cry at my booth saying they haven't been able to eat bread for 8 or 10 years. And they were really hesitant. They didn't believe me when I told them what I told them, because the information isn't out there that fermenting grains changes it and makes it, you know, there's always that 1% of somebody who just literally has got so many issues that it's not going to work for them. And I'm always really careful to say that because, you know, I'm not a doctor. I just know what I know from all the education and research that I've immersed myself in. And I just say, you know what, just talk to your health practitioner, take it, try a little bit, and then just let me know, because I want to know. The whole reason why I do this is so that most people can eat it. We want to be as inclusive as we can. That's why our dusting flour is organic rice flour. It's why we start with only organic, because you don't know if you're reacting to something. Are you reacting to pesticides? Are you reacting to it because it's been genetically modified? What are you actually reacting to? Is it the gluten? Is it the gliadin? What is it? You know, it's really interesting to kind of get into all of those pieces. But if you start with the cleanest organic grain, and then you mill it so that it's fresh and not rancid in any way, and then you use it within 24 hours, and then you soak it, and then you ferment it, you've just got this really amazing bread that almost anyone can eat. People that have, and so I cannot tell you how every market, when we all get together after the markets, and every market, every week, there's 3 or 4 stories at each of our markets where somebody has said, you know, I haven't been able to eat bread for over 10 years, or my child can't eat bread from anybody else but you. They get sick if they do. I have a lady that comes down from Santa Barbara to buy the bread from me at the Palisades, and she's a scientist and a doctor. And she said, why don't more people know about this? This is absolutely incredible. And she was one of the people that hadn't had bread in 8 or 10 years and can eat all of our bread. And, you know, I still have people that are really hesitant to try it because they're told, and I think it's just easier for doctors to just say, you can't have any of it, rather than to say, oh, if you really find this unicorn of bread that's organic and fermented and has to be fermented 3 days or more. And that's the other thing, is that there's no rules about what is sourdough. You can have some sourdough and put it into just some toxic white flour bread and then mix that and bake that and package that within an hour and call that sourdough. And that's not how it should be done. And that's obviously not going to do anything for anybody because it's not digesting anything. You're just putting in a little sourdough, mixing it up, baking it, and the health benefits are not there. So you have to really ask questions when you're buying sourdough. You have to ask the questions. If you have these gluten intolerances, you have to say, well, how long do you ferment? Do you use organic? Is it all organic? How are you making it? You've got to get in there. And that's why farmers markets are so great, because you get a chance to talk to the actual bakers and find out what they're doing and how they're doing it and why they're doing it. So you can get into it and find out.
Right. Because we have this saying, know your farmer. And that's always been a thing of farmers markets, where you buy either your produce or your meat. So I think we should start the saying now, know your baker.
Of course, because bread is a staple. It's like you go to the farmer's market and you get veggies and bread, and it's a staple that you and your family need every single week. And I love to hear the stories about the kids that are having their lunches with our bread, and families, and people are getting together and having family moments. I have, you know, a lady yesterday, we dropped off 3 baguettes to her that she's taking to a cancer patient who told her he could only eat our bread while he's in treatment. I mean, this is, our bread is a pivotal part of people's lives. And that means so much to me that, and again, it's why I wanted to do it, because I remember when my dad was first diagnosed and I had been learning everything I knew, and I knew, had done all this research about how sugar feeds cancer, and basically carbs break down the sugar. So that's why people think erroneously that they can't have any carbs at all if they're fighting illness. But I would go see my dad and he would be, you know, drinking a Coke or having snacks. And I would say, Dad, did they tell you that you really shouldn't be having any refined sugars? And No, they weren't telling him anything. They were just giving him the, you know, chemo radiation and all of that good stuff. But I learned so much from that experience because, you know, I gave him a lot of organic supplements and he took them, and his doctors were shocked when at one point his brain tumors went away and he was only given 6 months to live, but he lived 3 years. And he had really, at one point he was in hospice and came out of hospice, lived another year. So that experience, what I learned working for the health practitioner, changed my life. And all of that is kind of into when I research what I'm making and how I'm making it. You know, I want to see, is it possible? Because I, like I said, I'm a foodie first. I don't want to make it if it's not also delicious. It has to be delicious. It has to be great. And that's the beautiful thing about fermenting bread, is that the longer you ferment, the healthier it is. It also tastes better. The longer you ferment, the better flavor it has, the more depth of flavor. So people ask me all the time, how do you get this flavor? Fermentation. You just can't rush it. Slow food is the way to go.
As you've talked about, there are different ways to make the bread. Everyone has a little different process. Can you take us through the steps you go through from milling your grains to fermenting the bread?
Of course. Yes. So I tell people, especially when people want to talk about our, you know, sometimes they'll kind of turn away a little bit from the price of the bread. And, you know, honestly, we should be charging more because we really don't. There's not a lot of margin in what we do, but it takes us about 4 days to make it. So we have to mill. And then so we mill on the first day. The second day, we start what's called the autolyse. It's basically just soaking flour. And you soak the flour for several hours. You just add filtered water. And in our case, we are making large batches and we still hand mix. We don't use mixers at this point. So we have large bus tubs that we have our grain blend of flour in there. We add the filtered water. I use the stick end of a wooden spoon because it kind of acts like a little bit like a dough hook. And you stir that in until it starts to kind of gather together. And then we get our hands in there and finish mixing it in. And when you're autolysing, and that's spelled A-U-T-O-L-Y-S-E, it just means hydrating or absorption of water. Then you know, you're not trying to make a dough at that point. You're literally just trying to make sure there's no dry flour so that everything is hydrated, and then you let that sit. And so if we've got 20 bulk batches to go through, we just start, you know, we do it in the order that we're going to mix it and then bake it. So when we get to the end of those 20 batches, it's been an hour or two at that point. So then we can go back to the first batch after we take like a little break. We take a little break and we get all of our inclusions together, whether it be walnuts and cranberries, and we do all that prep during the week. The most important thing about bread making is preparation, especially when you're doing a lot. You have to prep. You have to scale everything the night before. It needs to all be measured out and ready to go. You have to do, oh, that's the other thing I completely forgot. The same day that you mill, you have to feed your starters and let those go for 8 to 12 hours. Then you create the levain for 8 to 12 hours. Then, and because that has to then ferment overnight, then you come in the morning. So that's where that fermentation starts. So starters have to be done, 8 to 12 hours go by. Levain has to be fed, which levain is just leaven, L-E-V-A-I-N, and it's really just a large starter. The nice thing about that is at that point you have the ability to change the flours. I keep two starters. I keep a soft white, it's a type of grain starter, and a hard red starter, which is a heavy whole grain starter, because I've just learned that for me, the flavor is all in the hard red. So I want my starter and my levain to be hard red. It needs the longer fermentation time, is what I feel just after my experimenting. That's just what I've come up with. That's how I like it. But you have the ability to, let's say you have a white starter, but you want to do a whole grain loaf. When you're doing your levain, you can have your levain be rye. It can be white. It can be dark. It can be whatever ancient grains. It can be whatever you want it to be. You feed it with that little bit of starter, it's going to turn into whatever the grains are that are in your levain. That's what it's going to turn into. So you just really have the ability to be very creative and play at that point. For ease of use, I don't do that. My starters and my levain are the same grain. It's the same flour. That way, too, if somebody has made a measuring mistake, I have the ability to correct it. Where if each levain was different, it would be really difficult if somebody missed one. If we forgot to put a levain together and now I'm going to be down a whole batch, if they're the same, I've got room to kind of play with it and try to correct it. So So that's just things I've learned over time doing this for us. Since we make over 1,000 loaves a week, we needed to be able to have that ability. So you start with milling, you feed starters, you feed Lavon, then you do what I was telling you about before, auto-leasing the flour or soaking the flour, and then you do what's called a final mix. So all the doughs are mixed twice, first in the auto-lease, and second in the final mix. And the final mix is where you add the salt and the Lavon, and you mix that in, and any inclusions, whether it be, you know, walnuts or cranberry or rosemary or just any kind of nuts and seeds, you mix that in on the final mix. And at that point, it goes into what's called bulk fermentation. And bulk fermentation is exactly what it says. You're fermenting the dough as it's in bulk form. So it's in a large batch. And during that bulk fermentation, you have to do what's called a stretch and fold to build strength into the dough. And that's really important, especially with dough that's been hand mixed, because when you're hand mixing, you don't have the strength of a mixer. There's no way, you can't. And so the dough does not have the strength that it should have most of the time when you're done with your hand mixing. So we have to do more stretch and folds for hand mixed dough than we would if we had been able to use a mixer. But then there's a lot of people say, oh, but if you use a mixer, you can oxidize the dough. But there's, you know, ways around that. You just have to be very careful. But again, that's something why our bread has so much flavor, because it is hand mixed. It's a little more gentle. So we don't have the ability to oxidize our dough, which strips it of flavor. Because a lot of commercial bakeries that are using all white flour, they're just mixing the dough to death. And the more you mix it, the more flavor is just leaving it. You're really just taking all flavor out of the dough when you overmix it like that. And so after bulk fermentation, we do what's called the divide and pre-shape and final shape. That's when you dump the dough out and you cut and weigh each dough piece. And this has to all be done really, really quickly because we have so much to go through, that you really have to get good at this part and be just muscle memory. We have people that are so good at the cutting and weighing that they know when they cut, they can feel it in their hand and know if that's going to be the right measurement or not. And it has to be exactly right. Each piece has to weigh exactly what it's supposed to weigh. Then it gets pre-shaped into a shape and it gets put on a board and it goes into it for a 30-minute rest. And then we do a final shape. And the final shape has to be pretty gentle. You want to be really gentle at that point, so that you're not ruining your crumb, so that the crumb is a little better and more open. And I will say this about crumb. There's a lot of, in the baking world, you'll see all these beautiful, like on Instagram, these beautiful loaves with this beautiful open lacy crumb. And that's very deceiving. And so everybody's trying to achieve this open crumb. Beautiful open crumb is really easy to do with white flour and no fiber. Fiber, and so the more whole grain you have, the less of an open crumb you're going to have. And it's not about the visual beauty of the loaf that's most important. It's the nutrition of the loaf. And that's what so many people don't get. Like, I'll have people say, why is your loaf smaller? Well, our loaf weighs the same as a big, beautiful loaf that might be across from us. But we're not using toxic white flour. We're using really kind of dense, high whole grain nutritional flour, and the fiber acts like little scissors and cuts the gluten when it's trying to stretch open really big. So you can tell the healthier the loaf, the smaller it's going to be, more dense, the less open it will be. The way you handle that to try to get kind of more of an open crumb is that you have to use a really wet dough, high hydration is what they call it, a lot more water, so the dough is very sticky and hard to handle. But you just learn how to deal with that. You learn how to get good at that. And you just have to make sure that you're actually letting your bread ferment for the right amount of time. The bread will show you. It's very hard to be precise when you don't have equipment like a dough room that's set at exactly 80 degrees with the right humidity. You're having to change the way things work on a daily basis based on the temperature of the room, the humidity today. Do I need to add more water or less water because of that? So that's where the word artisan really comes into play, because it is an art. You have to get a feel for it over time, and you do get a feel for it as you do it more and more and more. And you see, when the bread was firmer and easier to handle, my crumb on the inside was really dense. When the bread is sticky and hard to handle and kind of a nightmare, that's when my crumb looks a lot better. But the loaf may not rise as much because it maybe doesn't have as much strength. So it's really interesting how You know, you've got to find this kind of perfect, you don't want to let it ferment too long. You want to let it ferment exactly the right amount. The dough has to look and feel a certain way. And yeah. And so then we do after we do the final shape, you want to be gentle with that final shape. Like I said, you don't want to degas the dough and all of that kind of thing. And then we put it in proofing baskets or on baker's couches. And then we refrigerate that overnight before it's baked the next day. And that's what's called final proof or cold proofing. And the really interesting thing about cold proofing, the reason why our bread doesn't taste sour, so many people are like, oh, I expected it to be really sour like in San Francisco. Our bread isn't sour, but yet we do this really long fermentation. That's because in a cold proof, it actually makes the bread taste sweet when you end with a cold proof. And it gives it this really beautiful depth of flavor that is not this kind of acidic, alcohol-y, tart taste. And I love it. I love the flavor. It's got this very subtle tartness, but most people can't even taste that. Most people are like, wow, this isn't sour at all, but it tastes so good. Why does it taste good? Well, because we do all those steps and, you know, you can't rush it. It takes a while. But as we grow, we've already purchased some large mixers. We are going to be doing that to kind of help us cut down on some of the labor because we have to use people to be able to hand mix 20 batches a day. And it's very, very expensive to do. So we, are hoping that with mixers and just using them a very, very little bit, that will really help us be able to do this better and help us be able to grow and keep the quality of our bread exactly the same, if not better. So we're excited to kind of see how we can grow and where we can, you know, make some subtle changes and be able to make it just kind of easier to do. But yeah, and then we have this beautiful Italian oven. It's called a Tibaletti. It's a 4-deck stone oven. And it's, I think my husband, I can't remember if it's 12 feet or 14 feet deep. And it's just an incredible oven. It has the, I think it was put together in France because it has French instructions on the side. It's a 20-year-old oven. I was so lucky to get it because these ovens are really, really expensive. They're between $50,000 and $100,000 new. And so I was really lucky to get it when I got it. And it's just been incredible, you know, using it and playing with it and learning it because you have to learn each oven. Each oven has its own little unique idiosyncrasies and hot spots. And, you know, this deck is hotter than this deck and you have to kind of rotate the bread around. It becomes a dance. Even the bake itself is not easy because you have to let the bread go for a certain amount of time on this deck, move it to this deck, rotate it from the back to the front and from the front to the back so that you get a nice even bake. And I know people that have the newer ovens, which would be a dream, that have automatic loaders are not having to do any of that. And we're still doing it the old fashioned way on wooden peels and loading 10 to 12 loaves at a time by hand. And it's just a skill that you learn how to do. And one day when we do have that kind of nice equipment, it'll be just amazing.
And also part of making the bread, as you touched upon earlier, is using all organic ingredients. What do you look for in terms of farms to source your ingredients from?
Well, a lot of things. So number one, it has to be organic. There's a lot of local grains that you can get that are local, but they're not necessarily organic. So we only buy certified organic grains. We use a place that's in Northern California that I discovered when I was in school in South San Francisco. And they do primarily source from California farmers first. But I do know that there's more of a demand for organic than California organic farms can supply. So I'm sure that they do also source like from Montana and Utah and all of that. But because there's more and more of a demand for organic, but a farm can't easily switch from conventional to organic. You have to go through years and have your soil tested. And to make that transition is not easy because if you've been using pesticides, you can't just go, you know what, I'm going to go organic this year. Your soil, you know, is going to retain that those pesticides for years and years and years. And you have to do a lot of expensive work to get your soil replenished because people come and test it before you can be certified, thank goodness, or else everybody would say they're organic when they're not. So yeah, we let the grain place where we buy our grain, we let them do that work for us. And each organic thing that we buy from them, we get a certificate. And I did learn that if it is certified organic in the state of California, it is non-GMO. It is not allowed to be certified organic if it is genetically modified. I have had a couple customers say, no, just because it's organic doesn't mean. I'm like, no, I've actually followed through. I've talked to the actual place that certifies people being organic or not and talked to the place where we get our grain. And on the certificate, it says that it's non-GMO. And so we're really careful about that because, again, you don't know if you're reacting to something. And I saw with my own father when he was ill with cancer that, you know, you need to eat. Your body is doing a hard job trying to fight all the things that it's exposed to throughout the day. You can't be giving it more toxins, so it can't fight that and whatever else it's already fighting. So you need to really start with clean. It's really important that it be organic. And not only that, but I've heard stories about grain, because grain is typically stored in these huge silos and maybe there's mold on the grain and this and that. Well, the beauty of milling your own flour is you're buying the grain and storing it yourself, and you can properly store it as we do. And if grain is properly stored, you can have grain for 30 years and there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. That is the beautiful thing that nature gives us. That's why you need to fresh mill it, because when it's in seed form, if it's properly stored, you've got 30 years of time. It's not going to go bad. It's completely fine. And you mill it as you need it. When you go to the grocery store and they're milling it, you're buying this stripped toxic flour that's been sitting there for who knows how long. And even the whole wheat flour that you buy, they don't tell you this. They're using toxic white flour that's shelf stable. And then they just add back some of the stuff that they stripped out. They just add it back at the end after they've done everything they've done to it. So it's not whole wheat what you're buying. You know, the only way that you can really trust what you're eating is to mill it yourself and see that. And you can feel it. You can feel it immediately. That's what I'm so excited to teach people about and have them come. And we will also sell the personal mills and things like that. You can have manual mills. You can have these really cool mills like I like to use, which is like the mock mill and these other mills like that, that are these countertop stone mills that are just incredible. And you just feel the grain and you feel that amazing energy and that cellular resonance is what they call that, just energy from the grain. And then you feel it in the flour when you have your hands in it. It's just so therapeutic and just healing and incredible. And of course, like if we drop grain, which happens all the time, we go throw it in one of my flower pots and it immediately sprouts. It sprouts and is growing within 2 days. And so we have evidence of that all over the place. And it's just absolutely incredible. And I'm really excited to get into that too, by the way. We haven't been able to sprout our own grain because we just don't have the capability, because we're a cottage food operator. We didn't have the ability to do all of that and have drying trays and all of that. Because when you sprout grain, you have to first have it be damp so that it sprouts, but you don't want to actually have it be growing. And then once it sprouts, then you have to stop it at that point. So then you have to carefully air dry it in large area on drying trays. So I'm excited to experiment with all of that when we get into our new space and be able to sprout our own grains and have a lot of fun with some of that stuff.
There are a lot of different reasons that people have issues with gluten and with wheat. And I know I've certainly debated that with people as far as what it is. And over time, I've come to accept that it's not one reason. So the ones you've talked about are the hybridization and the pesticides from conventional flour. And then there's also, I would say, the whole issue of the ones you buy in the store, the commercial breads, they have so many different ingredients added in there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I could go on about them, but of course, the big ones are things that I tell people to stay away from in any product, such as high fructose corn syrup and canola oil and soybean oil. And then there's another thing which I learned about at a talk that Sally Fallon gave at the last Wise Traditions conference, which is a lot of these breads, there's gluten in the flour, but they also add in extra gluten, which Sally Fallon has said is unnecessary. And she's actually posed the question of perhaps that's the reason that people have such a gluten intolerance is we add in more gluten to the bread than we really need.
Right. And so that's really interesting. When I first started doing this and I was struggling, and that's the other thing, when you convert from regular white flour that most of us have grown up baking and cooking with to whole grain, even the school that I went to, they were teaching with white flour. They were not teaching with whole grain. They talked briefly about milling and showed us what a mill looked like, but we did not mill in school. We did not work with whole grain flour. I had to do all of that on my own, all of that experimentation. And that's also sad because it's a completely different beast. And so you just have to be excited and look at it as, oh, this is going to be fun to experiment with. It's going to be different. You have to expect that. But what I was going to say about that is, let me go back to what you mentioned, is that, yes, so when I first was doing this and I was struggling and I called my mom and I said, Mom, you know, I'm trying to make whole wheat healthy bread. I'm struggling with it. It's not rising or it's not doing this or that. And she was like, well, everybody that I ever knew, they would buy the Vital Wheat gluten, and you have to add that in when you're doing whole wheat. And I just knew inherently, as soon as she said that, I was like, absolutely not.
Right.
Because I knew from everything that I learned about nutrition that it needs to be simple as is found in nature. So other than just taking the grain heads and eating them as they are, so we're already milling, and then it should be simple. It should be exactly how it's given to us in nature, adding water. That's also found in nature. Mixing it together with your hand, you should be able to do that. And baking it on a hot stone or on a fire, that's all you should have to do. And so I was completely rejected that idea and just dug in and did the heavy research. And that's what a lot of bread companies are doing. They're adding this Vital Wheat gluten, which is completely ridiculous. You don't need that. But why? They're doing it so they can rush the process. Because what people don't realize is that the longer you ferment, it allows the natural gluten that's in the wheat to become stronger, which means stretchier, which allows the bread to rise. It needs time to do that. It needs time after the water has been added to make all of that happen. And if you want to rush it, and you want to beat it to death with a mixer and then get it to rise really fast so that you can bake it and package it and have it be shipping out in an hour, which happens at all these bread companies all over the world. It's about speed and how many loaves can they make in an hour and get out the door. That's what's wrong. They're having to do things to compensate for what they're not doing, which is allowing it the time that it needs. And so I learned that right away. And I knew that I did not want to have a bunch of ingredients. And the other sad thing is dough conditioners and preservatives, because unfortunately, good organic bread is not going to last forever. My husband bought hot dog buns 6 months ago from somewhere. I think it was hot dog buns or hamburger buns. And everybody, we were all like, what did you do? Why would you do that? And he left them on the counter. And we were all like, is he going to eat these? What's going to happen? Like, you're crazy. How dare you? Like, we have all this delicious bread. You can't eat that. And so it just became this kind of joke. And so he did never eat it. And it sat there. It sat on our shelf 6 months, and we would all talk about it. And we were like, can we throw these away now? Can we throw this away? And I'm like, no, we should leave it there as a mark of shame. I'm telling you, the bread did not change. The bread was still soft, did not change. It did not mold months after he purchased it. And I'll tell you another scary story, not scary, but it should wake us all up. When we took over this bakery, it's been several months now, we're still working on it. And they had stopped because they obviously struggled during COVID, which is unfortunate. They'd stopped baking, I think, in February, and we took it over in June. And so the place was filled with, even their pastry cases were filled with cakes and cheesecakes even, and pies and all sorts of stuff that they just left. They just walked away. It was crazy. And their trash everywhere, cakes on the floor. There were no ants. There were no bugs. There was no flies eating it. There was nothing. And there was the back parking lot was filled with boxes of cakes. And we just had to clean up trash for so long. It took us probably 6 weeks just to clean trash. And the insects know not to eat it because it's more chemical than it is composed of food. And what was even scarier is that you could open up a box of like a cheesecake and it's been 4 months sitting outside. And it looked brand new, like that you could cut it and eat it right now. And what is in there? What is in there to make that happen? That is not okay. So I have to tell people all the time that they go, oh, you know, when I buy your bread, you know, it gets hard by the end of the week. And I'm like, yes, exactly. If you're buying bread and it's not getting hard by the end of the week, you should throw that away. That's poison. You want it to change. You want to get your bread fresh every week because you want to know that the bread is changing and that it's expiring as it naturally should. If it doesn't, that's a sign immediately that you should not be eating it. And of course, there's things you can do to extend the life of good organic bread. You can freeze it. They freeze really well. But we need to change our mindset that, oh, I need this bread to last a really long time or whatever baked good or food that I'm eating or else I'm not going to buy it. No, that's poison. They filled it full of poison so that they can make money, so it can sit on the shelf for months and that you can go buy it and feed it to your family thinking that it's okay when it isn't. It's just we need to change and think of the fact that, okay, if I get this and it has a short lifespan, that's actually good. You need for that to happen. So And there's a couple natural things you can do. You can add some vitamin C and some things like that to bread to kind of give them a little bit of a longer shelf life. I don't even do that because I just want it to be as simple and natural as possible. We may play with that one day and just see, like, what does that mean? I'll look into that at some point. But if it's not natural to the wheat, why would I need to add that in? It just doesn't make sense to me.
I know you offer a number of different flours for your bread, and what would you say are some of the types of flours that you use and the advantages that some of them have?
Well, the types of flours, so we do a grain blend. So we do an organic rye. We do, and this is just the type of grain. There's grain types. There's something called a hard red. There's both spring and winter, and one of them is better for baking and the other one is better for sprouting. And there's something called hard white, an organic hard white. And again, that doesn't mean white flour. It just means it's the type of grain that it is. We use that. Those are pretty much the three that we use. I also have spelt and some things like that that I'm not using. Oh, I have a soft white. Soft white is organic grain as well. And again, soft white doesn't mean that it's white flour. It's the type of grain that it is. Soft white is low protein. And low protein is typically what you would use for making quick breads like biscuits and pancakes and waffles. And if you sift it really well, then it could be a cake flour. If it's milled really, really fine and then sifted, then that's how you get cake flour. And then, of course, you've got all the beautiful ancient grains. We haven't gone a whole lot into the ancient grains yet because the ancient grains are wonderful for digestibility and all of that. But we're already doing that. We're already achieving that with our long fermentation that we do and the soaking of the flour and all of that. So we're already achieving it. I love ancient grains. They're very, very expensive. So we will be doing some ancient grain loaves for sure, just like we'll be doing sprouted loaves, but we want to do all of that ourselves. You can buy sprouted flour, but we want to do that work ourselves. I don't want to just leave that to someone else. I want to be able to do the work and see it change and air dry it and mill it and do all of that. And same with ancient grains. We love that. But again, it would probably double the cost of the loaf to use an ancient grain. I want to make sure that we can get our bread in the hands of most people. So when we do that, we'll probably have a loaf or two of ancient grains and see how that goes. And they will be more expensive. They have to be because they're more expensive to purchase. But yeah, there's definite benefits to the ancient grains that because they haven't been changed over the hundreds of years and they're replanting them from seeds that were discovered. And so it's really nice. And so it's more digestible and things like that. So yeah, I'm a big fan of all of that. And I can't wait. And I also am a big fan of botanical blends. I follow a woman named Vanessa Kimball in London, and I can't wait to meet her one day or spend some time with her. And she does this really incredible, and she sells something called botanical blends, where she has this beautiful lush garden, and you can take classes with her as well, both online and in person. And one day I hope to go do that just because I love her knowledge. And she is just a wonderful, she's all about health and digestibility and nutrition. And that's exactly where my heart is. And it's less about what does the bread look like than what does the bread do for your body and how does it, you know, what does it contain and its fuel for your body and for your family and all of that kind of thing. And she has always done these botanical blends where you get choose these edible flowers and these beautiful colors and berries, dried berries and things, and you mill that along with your grain into this beautiful bioavailable nutrients and things. And so that's going to be something I'm getting into very soon as well, because I'm a big fan of that. And I'm really excited to have a lot of different herbs and edible flowers growing in the back area of our commercial space and being able to use that and have people choose from that as they're milling grains and having botanical blend loaves. And I'm so excited to get into that. And it's kind of like a painter with paints, you know, that's how it should be with bakers and grains and inclusions and just all the fun stuff. Like I've made activated charcoal pizza dough, and you can do all sorts of cool things like that with bread where you take two different doughs, like having a half activated charcoal, half regular dough, and kind of roll them together and have this nice swirled loaf and lots of beautiful artistic things you can do. So I love how bread is very science-based, but it's also extremely creative and just amazing in that way too. So there's really something for everybody. And the thing I love about it is the forced connection. It's really great for team building, whether it be your family or a group of people that you work with. So once we start doing the classes, we're going to call it bread therapy because it is so amazing. I saw this with my own family. Out of necessity, my adult kids would help us. And because with bread, it's kind of a 24/7 schedule. You know, you do the dough and then somebody's got to be up at night baking, or you have to do the Levain at night so that it's ready in the morning. So it's kind of like there's something that has to be done 24/7. So you either have to have a large family or a group of people that agree to come in, and everybody takes different shifts. But when you're rolling the bread or mixing the dough or doing whatever it is, it usually takes more than one person. And when your hands are busy, it's kind of like the old Amish quiltings where your hands are busy, but you're having conversation and you're connecting with the people across from you. And we've had great conversations and great debate. And just, it's been really amazing. I mean, it's definitely, we had some tough times in the beginning with the kids and us, but it was like we all came through it. And I think they're really proud of what we've been able to accomplish and just the fun conversations. I wouldn't change it for the world. Like, just so incredible. And I think people get that, and to get your kids, and I've taken my meals with me to family Christmases or vacations where I could take my little nieces and have them pour the grain into the mill and watch it come out as flour and have their hands in it, have them help me make a biscuit, have them help me cut up veggies. It's so good for kids to get that experience and to understand safety with knives and just having their hands and having them be so proud to feel the seeds, put the seeds in, watch it turn into flour. Now you're going to add water, watch that turn into dough. Now you're going to roll it and turn it into bread and bake it and watch it turn from the seed into now this delicious bread you're eating, or a biscuit or a pancake or a waffle or a tortilla. And it's just incredible. I love watching it change from beginning to end like that. And kids, I love watching kids' faces as then they become invested. And when kids learn, like, your palate changes when you eat this good, clean food. Your mouth wants more of that. Your body craves more of that. And the old kind of grocery store food that's so toxic, you start to taste that. You start to taste that it tastes like cardboard. And your body doesn't really want that. So you do evolve and change as you start to eat better.
While the hard white and the soft white aren't the same as white flour, do you think that they are good for people who don't want the total whole grain and are used to kind of the white flour taste, that those are closer?
Exactly. It's exactly why we do it. It's exactly why we use it. So I believe the right word is tannin. So the hard red is a very dark wheat, and it's hard red because it has kind of a reddish color. And when you mill it, it has kind of a pink tint to the flour, just so like, because we're really careful. We have all of our little formulas of how we do things. And one of the first things I do when somebody new comes to work with us is I pull out the different grains so they can learn what the grains look like so that they don't ever by mistake mill one flour into another, because that would ruin the whole thing, you know. And so it's really interesting. So soft white is the low protein one that we use for our biscuits and things like that, cookies, all of that. I also use soft white for making home style pasta, like for chicken noodle soup and things like that. And so you'll see some of that coming from us. I use soft white for pie crust, crackers, all sorts of fun things like that. Hard red is where all the flavor comes in bread, in my opinion. And so most people, when they're making a loaf, will use like 5 or 10% of hard red. And like I said, then so many people are nervous of that kind of, most people's experience with whole wheat bread from the grocery store is kind of a bitter taste. And that's because, you know, it's not fresh. Whole grain bread won't have a bitter taste. It'll have kind of a nutty, delicious depth of flavor taste, and it shouldn't be a bitter taste unless there's something wrong or it's rancid or something like that. Because as we all should know, whole grains have natural oil in it, and that's the reason why they strip it out of flour. They need it to be shelf stable, so they strip out all of the bran and the nutrition so that it can be on the shelf for a year and that it won't change it. And obviously there's a reason for the oil to be in there. You need that. You need that in the bread. You need it for your nutrition. You need it as part of your gut health. You need all of that in there. So the hard white is just, it's a grain that has less tannin or less of that kind of heavier flavor, but it's still whole grain. It's still got all the same nutrition. To me, it's like the difference between pinto beans and black beans. You know, most people assume that black beans are healthier But if you really dig into the nutrition, they're really kind of similar. Just maybe one has a little bit more of a subtle change of taste. They're both good. They're both good, and they're good for you if they're organic. So it's the same with hard red and hard white grain. Because I really dug into that and researched it. I was like, well, how did they get hard white? Was it genetically modified? No, it's just a different type of grain. These are just the simple descriptions that they gave them a long time ago. So we typically do a grain blend of hard red and hard white just so that it's more palatable for most people. Because most people are used to, you know, the Mrs. Baird's bread that's filled with all sorts of craziness and lots of sugar. And I don't know if most people know this, but typical loaf breads like that, it's basically a milk bread. Like they're filled with milk and butter and dairy, and which are delicious. Like it's the same with dinner rolls, right? That's really, really good and very sugary. But it's almost like eating a donut, like you're putting your kid's sandwich on a donut every day. It's just so filled with sugar and there's really no nutrition to it at all. So if you can transition your kids or your family into eating a crusty artisan bread, the nice thing about artisan breads is that it's just flour, water, salt. That's it. And so you just have to kind of train your palate that you don't need this kind of sugary, sweet, filled with dairy and milk bread. That's good, but that's more of a treat, just like you wouldn't eat a piece of cake every day. The actual bread that you eat every day should be something that's, you know, a little leaner. And they call it a lean dough versus a rich dough or an enriched dough. This is something that's just flour, water, salt compared to something that's got like eggs and dairy and butter and all that good stuff, which again is delicious. But do you need to eat that every day several times a day? Probably not. So that's why we choose. It took me a long time to play with the different grains and decide what percentages worked for me. And every baker does it differently. Because when I first started, I was going to do 100% whole grain. That's all I was going to do. And to me, there's no right or wrong. And then I went to school after that and they laughed. They were like, yeah, that's impressive that you want to do that. It's very, very, very hard to do. It's very, very, very hard to make an edible loaf that's 100% whole grain. But, you know, you can and do, and we will be doing one that's 100%. But we do, ours are about 70%. Whole grain. And then the other little bit, the other percentage is a sifted organic flour. So we just sift it out so that the bread is just a little bit lighter, not quite so heavy and dense, so that it's just a little bit airier. And again, no judgment. Different bakers do different things and do different types. And we will be doing a 100% whole grain loaf, but it's going to be a lot heavier and denser, kind of like our rye loaf is. It's very, very heavy and dense. And it's delicious, but sometimes you want something that is a little bit closer to what you would expect.
Along with the breads, you had talked about the biscuits, which you started with making. What are some other products that you offer along with your breads?
Okay, so we do an organic sourdough whole grain tortilla. I really love that. And so many people are going absolutely crazy for those because finding a clean tortilla is really hard. And when I say clean, I just mean plant-based. We only use organic extra virgin olive oil. We don't use any kind of other weird, like we don't use any kind of lard or animal fat or any of that. And then having the whole grain and then having it be sourdough. That just means that when you're doing any kind of dough like that, and the same with our muffins, the same with that, is that you just have to make it ahead and let it ferment in the refrigerator. It's the same with pasta. So, you know, you can make fresh pasta and then eat it 2 minutes later, or you can let it ferment. You can put some sourdough in there and let it ferment in your refrigerator for 5 days. And you can just kind of make a little bit every week and just have it in your refrigerator and make fresh pasta throughout the week. Or the same with cookies or biscuit dough or any of that. So fermentation, it just needs time. You can make it up. We make the biscuits on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then they're just in the refrigerator waiting to be baked until Saturday and Sunday. It took a lot to figure out what works. And I really wanted, you know, I can make, and I do make a really good biscuit and a pie crust that's not vegan, but I wanted for the market, just it's so easy to make a good biscuit with butter, and they are delicious. Good, healthy, whole butter is fine. But I wanted to push myself to be able to do a plant-based version. And then it was so good. In the beginning, I was making both. I was making a butter biscuit and then the vegan biscuit. And I was getting so much great feedback on the vegan biscuit that we just dropped the butter biscuit. We just dropped it. And I thought, you know, when I have my own place, I'll do it. But if you eat the butter biscuit and the vegan biscuit side by side, most people thought that the vegan biscuit was better. And I think they liked the idea of it. It's like, also, if you want to put a little butter on your biscuit, you can. You don't have to feel bad about it because there's no butter in it. And most, you know, biscuits, as you know, are just filled with butter. And same with our muffins. We make a banana muffin and a chocolate muffin. And we don't have butter in them, but you can definitely put butter on them if that's what you want to do. And it's delicious and it is better for you because we're using organic applesauce and it's less fat overall and it's high fiber, high protein. Your blood sugar doesn't spike, but yet it's delicious. It tastes really, really good. We do cinnamon rolls. We do tortillas, which I already told you about. We do pizza dough. And once we're in our building, we'll be doing our whole pastry line. At the very beginning, like I said, I started with biscuits and pies. I've always been a pie maker. I love that. And I haven't had the ability until now, once we're fully over there and I've got a laminating machine, to be able to churn out pies in a large number. And my pies are really, really good. I know that, especially around holiday time, that we're going to be doing hundreds of them. So I didn't even want to get into that unless I could produce a lot, because it's not something that I want to do and be like, oh yeah, I can only do 10 per weekend. So, you know, you've got to be able to do more because I know people are going to want them. They're really good. And we'll do mini pies, we'll do regular. And I have done those custom order for people. And I do a vegan pie crust and a regular pie crust. I do cornbread. I do a cornbread biscuit and we fresh mill the corn. And if you've ever had good homemade cornbread, you probably haven't had fresh milled homemade cornbread. And it is just a whole nother level. Grits, if you're from the South, if you've ever had grits, we'll be doing fresh milled grits at our little restaurant space. We'll be doing some kind of Cajun grits and we'll be doing that with some of our breakfast bombs that we're going to be doing. And yeah, so lots of good stuff coming down the road.
And among your biscuits, you have the blueberry biscuits, which I love. And I do eat them with butter. Actually, I eat pretty much any kind of bread with lots of butter if I'm not making it into something like a sandwich. You could almost say that I'm having bread or I'm having biscuits with my butter.
Yeah, I love a good butter. And, you know, if you think about it, there's certain things that just, like one of my favorite things, my pie crust that I make, I do a whole grain pie crust with butter and I do it the Southern way. I do really good organic butter and typically a high fat butter with also some good organic sour cream and a little bit of organic cream cheese. And that, because the interesting thing when you're making whole grain, like pie crusts and biscuits are already crumbly. When you add whole grain to the mix, it's a whole nother world because whole grain automatically makes it more crumbly because all that fiber, especially a lot of fiber, is just really difficult. It doesn't want to stretch. It doesn't want to hold together. And you're trying to roll out a pie crust that's just disintegrating. Like, that's tough. So it took me just a long time to play with it and see what works and what doesn't work. And you feel such a level of achievement when you get something to work and then you're having to taste it and adjust and adjust and adjust. And it's just really fun and incredible. But I make an amazing butter pie crust with our whole grain soft white. And it is so delicious. And I can't wait to be able to introduce that to people because I just love, and I make organic jams, things like that. And we're going to be introducing some fermented veggies and sauerkrauts and things like that soon too. Probably in November, December, we'll be doing that, which is a lot of fun to have with our bread and things like that. So we've got a lot of new things bubbling up and happening. And I love pastries as well. And we're going to be doing, of course, everything we do will be fermented. And I really am excited to see how a fermented Danish or a croissant, how that, because we use organic cane sugar or maple syrup and things like that in our breads for sweeteners. And when it's pre-digested, it's pre-digesting the sugar as well as the gluten. And so it does change it. It does change it. So I'm not sure on what level I'm going to be digging into the science of that to see how much does it change it. Does it reduce the sugar when it's pre-digested like that for us? Like, that's going to be a lot of fun for me to dig into. But yeah, so that's coming too. We're going to be adding some fun things like that. And we also do challah. We do a vegan challah and a traditional. We do dinner rolls and cinnamon rolls. Again, with our cinnamon rolls, our vegan cinnamon rolls people love so much that kind of the regular cinnamon rolls, I probably will only do around the holidays because people like the vegan ones on a regular basis because you can have something really delicious and know that, oh, it's a little bit less fat. And if you want to pour butter on it when you get home, then that's up to you. But I think especially for farmers markets, people that come to the farmers markets are usually a little bit more on the health. They're looking a little bit more on the health side. Whereas when we have our bakery open, we may be just getting kind of the more normal demographic of just people coming in and wanting just a traditional sandwich loaf or something like that. And a good baker should be able to do all of it because I think that whole foods, whether it be whole eggs, whole butter. I like cooking with all of that as well. And I really think that when you're talking about doing things in moderation and you're combining that with whole grains and long fermentation, that that's, you know, really good for us. I think when we exclude, sometimes we exclude whole foods, it can actually be to our detriment.
I think so too. We're just about out of time, but before you go, please let the listeners know where they can find you online.
Okay, great. So yeah, you can find us online at TopangaGrainCompany.com, on Instagram at TopangaGrainCo, at TopangaGrainCo. And we are at 9 farmers markets right now and hoping to be in a few more. And then our new facility will be in Woodland Hills, Canoga Park on Canoga, 7307 Canoga. We're not open yet, but we will be soon, we hope. And yeah, and the 9 farmers markets that we're at, you can find that on our website. We're at farmers markets on Saturday, Sunday, and Tuesdays, 3 on Saturday, 3 on Sunday, 3 on Tuesday.
Wow.
And hopefully somewhere near your area.
Thank you so much for coming on the program. It's a pleasure learning all about sourdough and the advantages of buying it at a farmer's market or at a bakery where it's fresh.
Yeah, it is really something that is, I think, good for us to make. It's good for us to eat. And I think also there's something to be said for putting our own energy into the food we eat. Sometimes that's really good. And, you know, you can use good sourdough bread. You can use it to make other things. You can make croutons and breadcrumbs, and you can bread veggies and do all sorts of good things with it. And that's another thing, like when good organic bread starts to get older or harder, then just use it to make croutons, use it to make breadcrumbs, and then put those in the freezer. And then you've got really nice bread that's not going to cause any inflammation. And even the breadcrumbs to bread whatever you like, whether it be meat or veggies or what have you.
All sounds great. Pleasure having you here.
Thanks, Aaron.
That's all for this episode of The Appropriate Omnivore. New episodes of the show are now released every Wednesday. Next week, I interview Brad Kent of Bagel and Slice. Follow me on social media for more information on the next episode. And to make sure you never miss any of my podcasts, go to iTunes, Google Podcasts, or Stitcher and subscribe to The Appropriate Omnivore. You can also listen to all of my podcasts on my website, appropriateomnivore.com. There you can find recipes from the guests I interview, plus all of my articles covering lifestyles in the world of real food. Until next time, my pantry is officially closed.